Here at Vox, we like to learn from Christian teachers from diverse backgrounds. And today we've invited our friend, theologian, Father James Allison, to share with us. James lives in Spain, but has been quarantining in Mexico since March. He's one of my favorite authors. We met a few years ago through another Vox friend, George, and I'm often moved by how generous and open-hearted James is toward his friends and especially toward his enemies in such a Christ-like way. I've learned a lot from James over the years, from his faith, how he loves and forgives others. And we're so grateful for him opening the scriptures with us this morning. So here's James Allison.
Greetings, my sisters and brothers at Vox Venia. Greetings from Saltillo in northern Mexico. I'm only a few hundred kilometers south of you, in a very different world. But anyhow, thrilled to be talking to you and thrilled that Gideon invited me. And thrilled also that he was kind enough to ask me to choose what I wanted to preach to you about. And given that this Sunday is the Sunday closest to the Catholic feast of the Most Sacred Heart, I thought that I would be a little bit bold, a little bit naughty, and preach to you from the texts of the Feast of the Sacred Heart. Now, some of you may have seen statues of the Sacred Heart. Jesus looks a bit like this. The statues can often be pretty bizarre. And Jesus looks as though he's just undergone open heart surgery. Sometimes he's got his hands open after the open heart surgery, and sometimes he's pointing to his heart open as a result of the surgery, as if to say, look, I've got one too. But that's really what this is about. Look, I've got one too. So let me just tell you a little bit about what's going on with the statue, with the feast, and why this is important in the post-evangelical world as well. The feast came about in the 17th century, really thanks to some visions which a nun, a French nun, had. And the background to this is that at the time, as so often, church discourse, preaching, what we understand by life of church, had been taken over by rigorists, people who are strong on morals, strong on the cerebral, and very little sense of the relational, very little sense of love being what it's all about. And of course, this binds people into the notion that religion is all about good behavior and that love is somehow secondary. And this vision of this nun was kind of a shock to set alive the memory that actually it's all about love. And so we got this feast. It took some time for the popes to set it up and agree to it, but they got this feast. And the texts they give us are the texts which you have today. The first reading from Deuteronomy, the second reading from Epistle of St. John about love, and this third reading, the Gospel reading, which is what I'm going to start commenting with you, from Matthew's Gospel. Let's look at Deuteronomy first. In this text from Deuteronomy, Moses tells the people of Israel that it's all about love. You're a people consecrated to the Lord your God. It is you that the Lord our God has chosen to be his very own people out of all the peoples on the earth. If the Lord set his heart on you. In other words, Moses is saying, there's a movement of love. There's an impulse of love towards you. That's why he's giving you these commandments and things. Now, it should be said that in the Deuteronomy passage, if you read it, there's still some ambivalence in that. Know that your Lord is a gracious God who keeps his faithful to his covenant and his graciousness for 1,000 generations towards those who love him and keep his commandments, but who punishes in their own persons those that hate him. In other words, yep, there's love, but also there's an element of, if you don't, you're going to pay for it. That ambivalence, which is so often present to our day in the religion which we call Christianity, and which very often suggests that we have a two-faced God rather than a God who is love. But this ambiguity doesn't survive when it comes to Jesus' preaching. Jesus exclaims, "I bless you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, for hiding these things from the learned and the clever and revealing them to mere children. Yes, Father, for that is what it has pleased you to do. Everything has been entrusted to me by the Father." Okay, please remember that's everything. There are no other hidden bits. No other hidden bits of God left behind. Everything has been entrusted to me by the Father. So there are no ifs and buts hanging out there. Everything has been entrusted to me by the Father. No one knows the Son except the Father. The Father is the one who actually knows who Jesus really is, whose knowledge and love of him holds him into being and allowed him to walk amongst us. Just as no one knows the Father except the Son. So Jesus is saying perfectly clearly here, I'm the only one who actually knows what God is like. And the only way to come to know who the Father is through me. I will show you what the Father's love is like. And that's the only access that any of you have to God. Any of you who has an outside God who is saying, yes, we know the Jesus and the love bit, but remember, there is the justice and the blah, blah, blah. You always get that. You always get this Janus figure who comes in the back door. And Jesus is terribly keen for us to let go of it. He said, no one knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. What I am choosing to do is to reveal to you who the Father is. And the only way you're going to know this is through me, Jesus, and my giving myself to you. And then Jesus says this, come to me, all who labor and are overburdened, and I will give you rest. Shoulder my yoke and learn from me. Okay, the yoke, at the time, this would have been perfectly clear to a Hebrew public, and St. Matthew is writing principally for a Hebrew public. Shoulder my yoke. The yoke was the law. He says, learn from me. For I am, the term which in our Gospels is gentle. In some translations it says meek. And actually, I think meek is probably the better word because it's a direct quote from the book of Numbers. In the book of Numbers, there's a row where Aaron and Miriam wonder why God doesn't speak to them as well as to Moses. And so they want to be spokespersons as well. And God punishes them. I forget what he does to Aaron, something nasty. He punishes Miriam pretty terribly. He makes her a leper for a week. But he says, Moses is the meekest of men. Only Moses, my servant, who is the meekest of men, is the one who speaks for me. In other words, even in the book of Numbers, God is saying, there is no way to pass off my voice except through meekness. And what Jesus is saying here is, you want to know what meek Moses was really about? That's me. I'm enacting in your midst what Moses at his meekest was pointing towards. He says, for I'm meek and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Yes, my yoke is easy and my burden light. He's saying something here about the quality of heart. I'm here to be alongside you in your vulnerability, in your shame, in your weakness, and it is there that I love you. And not only this, he wanted actually to go through with it all. This is, if you like, what is central to this feast today, is the understanding that Jesus was a fully human being who, as God, gave his life as a walking, talking manifestation of what the love of God looked like. And what it looks like is a gradual and terrible stretching of heart in love and compassion. Every time those words come up in the gospel, which they do quite frequently, Jesus was gut-wrenched, or Jesus was moved with compassion. Our translation's rather, sometimes rather banal, but the Greek word is utterly moved with the entrails, gut-wrenched with compassion for his people, for they were sheep without a shepherd, for instance. That's one of the expressions that he uses. He's talking about this huge stretching of heart. how, as a human being, he lived amongst us, he learnt to live with us, he saw us in all our weakness, he understands our shame. He is moved, utterly moved by who we are. He's not set in place a series of instructions so as that we should stand up and be jolly good people. He's not particularly interested in us becoming jolly good people. On the contrary, he's interested in us coming alive as children, whose weakness, whose vulnerability, whose shame is able to be held by him tenderly. Our shame held in his tenderness. And he was prepared to go through to that, to the bitter end, literally, to the breaking of his heart in his death on the cross, hence the breaking of the heart symbolized with the blood and the water coming out. That's one of the interpretations that that people use in reading St. John's Gospel in that way. But the notion that this was all done at a human level, so that we shouldn't be speculating about the love of God as if it were something that can only be worked out by particularly nerdy mathematical types. No. The Feast of the Sacred Heart, these texts of the Heart of Jesus, is trying to bring us right down to the messy, mucky, lovely set of interhuman relationships where we are so frightened of each other, where we don't know how to love, where sometimes we even reject love when it's given to us because we're too ashamed. That this is the place in which Jesus wants to show us that he loves us. Pope Francis, in this month, a month dedicated to the Sacred Heart, has asked us to pray along with him. Jesus, give me a heart like yours. Let my heart be like yours. And that's really the purpose of this feast, to say the love of God actually exists as the only thing that Jesus is really all about. And it exists in human form, and it is something given to us. And we can be, if you like, infected by it. It can be contagious in us so that we start to imitate it and act towards other people as Jesus did, out of love. So, just these little words. I hope that they make a difference in Austin as you're living through the forms of confinement and gradual beginning to come out as you are. Allow ourselves to be loved by the divine love that shows itself as a completely human heart and allows us to become infected and then contagious with this human love of giving ourselves away for others. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.